Now to the Australian Dance Theatre's work, The Beginning of Nature. This one draws on the rhythms of the natural world, the cycle of the seasons, the swing of the tides, and the stillness of hibernation. And it includes words sung in Kaurna, the language of the Adelaide Plains. One of the only people to speak Kaurna is Jack Buckskin, and he's worked on this project. G'day, Jack.
G'day, how are you?
Pretty good. How would you say g'day in Kaurna?
Nina Marni is our contemporary greeting, which means, are you good? It's not how we greet each other, but hey, we've moved into the 21st century, and that's how people say g'day these days.
Yeah. Nina Marni.
Yeah, that's it.
Nina Marni, Gary.
You too. Nina Marni.
Gary Stewart is the director of the Australian Dance Theatre. So why did you decide that Kaurna, or the Kaurna language, is a part of the story that you wanted to tell?
Well, I was intent on making this work about rhythms in nature and ecosystem processes and drawing humans into the materials of nature, and which is generally not how we view ourselves in the West. And I wanted to use the human voice, and initially I thought, oh, English, but then I thought, well, that doesn't make any sense, really, to use English, because it's only been on this continent for a blip. And so it made much more sense to work with an Indigenous language, and most appropriately the Indigenous language of the Adelaide area, which happens to be Kaurna. And so then from there I met some cultural leaders, Uncle Lewis Buckskin and Leanne Buckskin, and they put me on to Jack, who was really shepherded us through the project and the use of the language in the score.
Jack, tell us a bit more about the language. I gather it's a language that was almost lost.
Yeah, I guess as early as 1840, they were saying that our language was extinct, and due to, I guess, most of our peoples being moved over to the missions and reserves over near Port Lincoln area. So I guess our language hadn't been on an everyday, or spoken language on an everyday basis since around 1952, around that time. And then I guess our elders and people being kept on the missions and reserves until around the 1970s, the language and culture was banned, so it wasn't used and spoken through that process. And in the late 80s, one of our a non-Aboriginal linguist of ours, Dr. Rob Amory, had done a thesis around it and done extensive research, and from a personal passion for himself had got himself on a journey making contact with local people in the area, a lot of the elders that had moved off and had grown a connection, and eventually started teaching them how to read and write from the old historical resources that were documented in the 2 years prior to people being moved away.
Who'd made the documentation? What were the records of the language that you had to work with?
So we had around about 10 observers, but the one that we adopted was two German missionaries, Teichelmann and Sherman. They recorded around about 2,500 words and a really good grammar. And fortunately, we were lucky to have a really good grammar. These are two people that came with, I guess, a really good understanding on how language was constructed, where we know around the country a lot of people just are relying on people that just knew words and didn't really know the systems. So I guess we were lucky that we sort of had like semi-linguists as documenting our language.
So this is in the mid-19th century they did it. And as you say, yeah, there are lots of word lists, but to actually have a grammar, that's such a valuable resource. So, Jack, people are learning the language now. How many people would you say have a working knowledge of the language? How many people can speak?
So we probably have around about 10 of us that can speak the language, which has grown in the last sort of 4 to 5 years. You know, we've got now people, we've got a Certificate 3 in learning and teaching language, so we've got career pathways for our young kids, and young people are going through school wanting to be language teachers. So it's a growing movement, that's for sure, and I guess through that we're getting more and more people speaking on an everyday basis, even in the comfort of their own homes.
And Jack, what's your own role in this?
So I'm a Kaurna language teacher and cultural mentor. That's what I've been doing for the sort of last 12 years, and when I was asked to come in on board and just have a look and see how, if appropriate, was to incorporate language into the project. And pretty much from day one, I fell in love with what Gary and the Australian Dance Theatre were trying to portray, and incorporating the language on not just a national scale, but an international scale. I didn't know how far it was going to go, but it's definitely reached those expectations plus more.
There were no misgivings about you know, cultural appropriation is a term you often hear.
I was trying to embed a lot more culture and stuff throughout it, and Gary was like, no, this is what we're trying to get understand, because he didn't want to step on those toes, and I guess we had the flexibility of having a little bit more control over how the whole thing was portrayed. So yeah, I think it was pretty good from the day dot, and I guess language and culture was embedded, and it just took off from there.
Gary, in my experience, these forms of cultural consultation are always incredibly enriching. How did you find it?
Yeah, it was really fascinating to get Jack's perspective on the piece that I'd made. I'd already made a certain amount of material in the studio with the dancers when he came on board, and I was really working through the prism of Western science and biology through, you know, looking at ecosystem processes and the sort of Western understanding of rhythms in nature. And what was really terrific was that when Jack came and watched what I'd made, he was really excited because he was viewing it through his own cultural sort of understanding and that prism of knowledge. I kind of loved hearing his interpretation of what I'd made, which was kind of quite different from what I intended, but it was really kind of fantastic that there was this other reading to the work. In particular, the opening scene, the dancers are dancing with rocks, and as it turns out, the rock is Jack's totem. So I thought that was a really great omen from the very get-go. Initially, I'd had conversations with Uncle Lewis O'Brien and Leanne Buckskin, and they were so open about the idea of ADT working with the language. It was very encouraging from the beginning. But I just wanted to be careful throughout the process that we were very respectful in the way that we work with the language and any aspects of the culture.
Well, let's hear some more music from the show. This is music composed by Brendan Woiti. What are we about to hear here, Jack?
What we'll hear is two classical singers really just giving a different feel to the language. It breaks it up a little bit, but gives a clear understanding, clear, I guess, pronunciation on giving somebody a different understanding. Obviously, when we speak language, we speak it a little bit different, but when you hear it this way, it's a little bit ghostly.
Great music to dance to, Gary. What do we see on stage in this work? Paint a picture for us.
Well, the work moves through a series of scenes that create a relationship between the dancers' bodies and ideas in nature pertaining to the sort of rhythmic processes of nature, such as flocking and herding and swarming in species, and just the way in which bodies in nature are patterned, and the morphology of bodies have patterns within them, so, and segmentations and so forth. So reflecting that, reflecting the sort of ebbs and flows that are a component of aspects of nature, such as the seasons and tides and so forth, a sense of surge, a surge of energy and a releasing of energy and a diminishment. But there's also some depictions of ecosystem processes, such as parasitism and mutualism and predation and so forth. So that's sort of like a subtext to the work. But the music itself, written by Brendan Woiti, who's a long-term collaborator, it has a relationship to repetitive minimalism, and he calls it dense minimalism because it's quite a dense score, and it's played by the Zephyr Quartet, but all of the sounds are picked up and mic'd, and then sort of a process through a series of effects, electronic effects, along with the singing. But the music, because it is minimalist and repetitive, has a relationship to the rhythms in nature. And also the Kaurna language, the use of that is just words and syllables that are repeated. And that was something that I mentioned from the very beginning, when I first spoke to Jack and when I spoke to Uncle Lewis O'Brien. Was it okay to break the words up and repeat words and syllables, and they were totally fine with that. And I think the rule was, as long as everything is done in a respectful manner, which was the intent, that it was, anything was sort of really okay in terms of the use and manipulation of the language. So there's lots of repetitions of words and syllables in the score.
Let's hear a little bit more of the score, and you can talk to me about it, Gary. This is Predators. Well, we know it's menacing.
That's right. Yeah, it's quite predatory. That's just, I think it's kind of like almost like a sort of pizzicato, but it's almost that kind of effect with the strings and then an electronic reverberation affecting the raw sound.
Cello, but not as we know it.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah. Yeah, the Zephyr Quartet are the really stunning Adelaide bass quartet. Amazing musicians. They're very open, which kind of, they really embrace this project, and I guess the experimental nature of the music within the project. But sonically and tonally, it's quite a familiar place, even though in terms of the technology, it's quite different for a string quartet to be playing in this way.
Jack, have you been watching performances of this, rehearsals of this?
Yeah, I remember coming in when it was, when I guess pieces were only half established, and I remember going back to watching it for the first time, like on stage, was at WOMAD in Adelaide. I took my young daughter, who was 6 at the time, and she was mesmerised. She came to a few rehearsals when it was in its early stages, when was getting an understanding of it, and at first she wanted to be a little dancer, and then once she saw it happening on stage, she was taken over. And then she had a few favourites as well, so she was lucky to go backstage later and get a couple of photos with them.
Jack Buckskin there, and it turns out his daughter wasn't the only one mesmerised by the beginning of nature. The Australian Dance Theatre have picked up 4 Helpman Award nominations for this one, including Best Dance Production and Best Choreography. Jack is a Kaurna and Noongar man who works for the protection and growth of the Kaurna language, and he worked on the libretto for this show, The Beginning of Nature. And you also met Australian Dance Theatre Artistic Director and the choreographer of this show, Gary Stewart. And I'm looking forward to their next world premiere with great anticipation. It's a show called North/South, and that one opens in September.